It's time for the Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. To be a part of the show, give us a call at 321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or tweet us at Lunch Break ESPN.
What's up? It's the Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7. Justin Ferguson, Painter Sharpless. Hello, Painter.
Friend.
How's it going?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Should we just stall until we know Shadow calls?
No, I want to see if it continues. You know, we had someone commenting on that on social media. They pointed out that he's come in hot the last few days. I'm not minding it. He's providing some energy to start things out. It's been a little harder to follow the last couple of days.
Yeah, it's been really hard to follow the last couple of days. But we'll see if he joins us here to start off the show. This is about the time he'll pull the trigger if he has been doing it this week. But Auburn football in the middle of an off week. They got one more practice today, and then they will break for the weekend. And then it's all Auburn, Georgia in preparation for that. We'll talk some Auburn basketball as well. Talk college football, college basketball, some stories going around the sports world, and whatever's on your mind. 334-321-1390. These Thursdays are usually kind of free-for-alls, so let us know what's on your mind. Any questions, any comments, 334-321-1390 for today's show.
The field, the Jordan Hare Field, the turf crew, they've got their work cut out for them over the next few weeks because the weather's changing.
Mm-hmm.
You've got some warm days, but it's supposed to get cold this evening. Three straight weeks of playing on it. And they do a great job of keeping that field looking crisp. I saw they had a little video, not little, it was just a video, it wasn't little, on Twitter. And they had that is a massive tarp.
Massive.
And nonetheless, shout out to them. They probably don't get enough recognition for how good the field looks. Is there any real Auburn news? Anything has anything changed since I saw you yesterday, Justin?
No, not really. I mean, if you want a couple of quick updates, Marlon Davidson, Jeremiah Denson have both been back at practice for Auburn, which is a positive. They are expecting to get Booby Whitlow back to 100% for the Georgia game, even if he comes back. Be interesting to see how that running back rotation. There's this obsession right now, I think, with who's the number one back if Whitlow and DJ Williams are both healthy, and it's like
I don't think it matters too much.
I don't think it matters. I really don't. But
also, might it
starters don't matter at all? Really,
might it just depend on what the coaching staff feels?
Gameflow has a lot to do with that, usually.
Well, and I'm curious to see, like, you know, what the coaching staff identifies as the strengths of Georgia and Alabama's defense, and and then they're going to go probably based on the back skill set, not necessarily, you know.
Right.
And we've talked about how this is going to be one of the more fascinating position groups to watch over the next year, because the offensive line, it's going through a big reload. The running back group's sort of the opposite. I mean, they're adding more bodies to the group, but if anything, they've got so many options, you start to wonder if there are too many mouths to feed. Now, I don't think that there are, but
I don't know, man. There's going to be a lot of dudes back there.
There may be some guys who don't feel completely content with the amount of touches they're getting next year, anyway. I think this year it's pretty solidified that Williams and Whitlow are right there at the top, and then we've kind of got an idea of what the rest of the players' roles are.
But, like, if it holds right now, next season, you've got Whitlow, Williams, you've got Malik Miller's coming back. I mean, he still plays a role on the team as it is right now, even though he might not be getting a ton of carries. Shivers is back. Mark Anthony Richards will be back, and they said, you know, he's going to redshirt. Well, it was already confirmed he was going to redshirt this year, but might not see him this season as he continues to recover from that leg injury. So you got Whitlow, Williams, Miller, Shivers, Richards. You've also got Harold Joyner still in the mix there. And then on top of that, you've got a guy in Tank Bigsby committed who, you know, on paper was the best recruit out of all seven of these guys. And so it's like, it's hard to deal with seven running backs. Like, that's going to be a difficult process to be in. If you're Auburn, I wouldn't be surprised if somebody leaves that group, because either by changing position or changing schools, because this is, That's a lot of
If you
want
to see the field, yeah.
Even if you're rotating a ton, if you're rotating a ton, what's the most a team's going to use a running back in a year? Four?
Having three backs and getting, 10 touches each.
That's tough. Not very many teams do that.
And let alone adding a fourth guy. So, that is a group to watch. Who do you think can eat the most out of that group?
Physically?
There's a number of guys. All those guys, I have to imagine, have extremely high metabolisms. They're some of the best athletes on the team. They all are pretty, Whitlow, one of the bigger backs, I guess. So it's like, who throws down the most food? Because I'm a small guy. I can eat a lot. Sean Shivers is a small guy. Don't you think he can throw back some food?
Probably. I would imagine him. I think Harold Joyner would be a good
ooh, that's there. A nice blend
a
of like
a tall guy.
Yeah. He's both tall, physically.
Spread out easier.
Yeah. No, mm-hmm. That's a good.
Also a former basketball player, and like basketball players eat a ton.
What about Malik?
Malik would definitely work. And like the thing about Malik is like he's a big guy. So like
He needs to eat.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because he's got to play that power back third down role. So
we said hot dogs were bland or average at sporting events, albeit classic for the baseball game.
I just don't like hot dogs.
I'm a big hot dog guy. Nonetheless, I had a delicious sandwich yesterday, by the way. Let me tell you about it. Roast beef.
Okay.
Pastrami, corned beef, Swiss pepper jack, light mayo, trying to watch the LBs. Threw on some Grey Poupon, some black olives. Boy, we had a fat sandwich, P-H-A-T, fat.
That's a lot.
Who eats the most hot dogs on the team? Spreading out. Doesn't just have to be the running back group, although I think, here it's got to be someone on the offensive or defensive line,
right?
Just by sheer volume.
I don't know.
And I don't think, like Logan, our intern, just said Truesdale, because like you tend to think, like one of the bigger guys, right? Yeah. But I think that you might be surprised. Like Marlon Davidson, for instance, slimmed down, but I bet that guy can put down some food. He's just been more mindful about what's been going in his body.
Yeah.
But like if he wants to, can
Jet Driscoll seems like he'd be a winner there.
He seems like a moon pie guy, man.
Really?
I don't know.
Does he even know what a moon pie is? I mean, he's from the Northeast.
Is that not a thing up north?
It's a southern thing.
Really? I thought that was a Little Debbie thing.
No. Moon pie is its own thing.
Oh.
Made in Chattanooga, I believe.
The things you learn here, Justin Ferguson. All right.
So,
back to the running backs.
Yeah, back to the right. It's going to be very interesting. I have a story up today on DJ Williams at the Athletic. And
is this a fake fight between, like, there's not real, like you just mentioned the running back group, and like there's this question about who's number one.
Right.
This isn't really a problem, is it?
No, I don't think it is. I don't think it is. But about DJ Williams, it's like, be very interested to see who gets the most carries in the Georgia game, because Williams is on a tear right now, and Whitlow, while the most experienced guy in terms of touches in this team, in this backfield, him or Cam Martin, you have a situation where Whitlow's not at 100%. He hasn't been at 100%. So how does that balance out, I guess, is the big question that I have for this. DJ Williams, though, only three other running backs since 2000 at Auburn have had more rushing yards to their first four games than DJ Williams. Now, Williams and Whitlow had the exact same amount, 303 yards. But Ben Tate, Ontario McCaleb, and Michael Dyer are the only other ones. And the interesting thing about Williams is he's part of that group. There's only five guys who've ever run for 300 yards in their first four games since 2000 at Auburn. He's the only one who's done it all against SEC competition. The rest of those guys, I mean, there's a guy like Ben Tate. If you look at Ben Tate's numbers in 06 when he started, when he first started out, he had like four carries for a yard against Mississippi State in his debut. And then the next week he ran for like 180 against, Central Carolina or something like that. Some school we've never heard of. So the fact that Williams is doing it against SEC competition is very relevant. And then, look, his games have been against Mississippi State. He didn't play against Florida, and then he played against LSU, Arkansas, I had that backwards. He's played against Arkansas, LSU, and then Ole Miss. Malzahn said it last night. It says a lot about his potential and what he could be as a running back at Auburn if he's already doing this against SEC opponents. This isn't just, we eased him into it, let him see how it's not like he got to tear it up against Kent State or Tulane, which I don't think Auburn would have been able to tear it up against Tulane the way they were playing defense in that game. But it wasn't like he got to run wild on Kent State early. It's the fact that his two biggest games have come against, one of them has come against LSU, and the other one has come against Ole Miss, who's got a really good run defense. And that is very, very telling for his future, I think, that he's able to move the ball in the way that he has. And also, I think the big thing about DJ Williams, though, Painter, is that you look at Auburn's offensive line this season, it's been inconsistent at best, I guess is probably the best way to put it in terms of run blocking. There'd be games they play well, there's plays where they play well, and then there's games where you kind of, you don't really feel like they're doing a ton. DJ Williams is averaging the most yards after contact of any Auburn running back by a lot. It's like a full yard per carry more than the next running back on the group. Like when he gets hit, he does not go down easily. He pushes the pile. Malzahn likes how he falls forward. You get a run and you get hit. Well, you're not going straight down. You might pick up 1, 2, 3 more yards because you just keep running hard. That's very significant because that's the kind of running back this offensive line needs right now, because they're not the line that's creating a lot of pre-contact yards for guys right now. So it's very helpful for Auburn to have a guy who's able to power through some tackles early on. And he's done that. I mean, he's run over two guys already early in his career.
3-2-1-13-90. Join us here on the lunch break. We're going to get to break just a moment early, continuing to talk about this Auburn football team during their open week. More lunch break straight ahead.
Follow the lunch break on Twitter at Lunch Break ESPN.
Welcome back to Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7. Justin Ferguson, Painter Sharpless. Painter, Auburn High. Playoffs. Tomorrow night.
Yeah, Wings 94-3. Coverage beginning at 6:30. Kickoff at 7. It's at the Duck, but if you can't make it out, be sure to tune in, whether that's at wingsfm.com or with the Wings 94-3 app.
Who are the Tigers playing?
Murphy.
Tough break for one guy named Murphy to have to play in a playoff game.
It's going to be a brutal beat for him. This is a exciting time for a lot of areas around here, and it's been some good teams. Wetumpka, Opelika have had good seasons. Auburn has finished strong. Central, obviously, been one of the more dominant teams in the state over the last 5-6 years. So this is going to be a fun one. I'm looking forward to it. Chris Hummel, of course, will be there, as will Rob Payton, Scott Bagwell.
Speaking of guys who can play teams by themselves, did you happen to see Cole Anthony last night for North Carolina?
I did not get a chance to watch. I was at Amsterdam doing my thing, but how did he look? How'd they look?
Really good. North Carolina beat Notre Dame 76-65. They had to kind of come back a little bit. It was a little bit of a back-and-forth game and a big second half from North Carolina. Cole Anthony, though, his college debut against a conference team, mind you, his line, 34 points, 11 rebounds, 5 assists. Now, I want to focus in real quick on the 34 points angle here, because Cole Anthony scored 34 points in his college debut. Later on in the evening, an ACC matchup between Virginia and Syracuse. Virginia, we know, likes to play a lot of defense, that stifling defensive style. Syracuse having to reload a little bit. Final score of that one, Virginia 48, Syracuse 34. Cole Anthony scored as many points as the entire Syracuse team did against Virginia. And so when those two teams meet later this year, my counter is, let's let Cole Anthony play Syracuse by himself. I feel like that's a good comparison to have. Like we need to go side by side. Could he outscore all of Syracuse? I guess we could make some rule. Like, could you make some rule that, like, he could only be the only one who can shoot, and like you can play 5-on-5 on defense, but like
offensively,
Cole Anthony has to be the one shooting.
Who's the most unfair? Like, if you're going to play 1-on-1 or 3-on-3, I've always felt like LeBron James would be the worst person to draw in 1-on-1. Maybe that's starting, like
Giannis.
Yeah, that could be different with Giannis.
Kawhi.
I would still pick LeBron. I think maybe not today in age, but over the span of his career. In 1-on-1, are you taking Michael? Are you taking Kawhi over LeBron in 1-on-1? Even Giannis, Kareem.
Well, I mean, are we picking up people that have always existed? I mean, because, like, if it's dudes that always have played, like, Shaq. Like, prime Shaq. Like, how are you going to stop him?
Just bullying him.
Yeah, just... He's just gonna drop, step, and dunk on y'all all
game. But you don't think LeBron can defend some of that?
Like, LeBron could defend some of that, sure, but it'd be tough. Like, but I don't know. It's like with LeBron, it just depends, because LeBron turns off and on times from, like, looking physically dominant to kind of being, you know, kind of passive a little bit. At least with Kawhi, I think Kawhi's one of the best on-ball defenders in the world, and he's got a really good jump shot. I mean, he has a variety of ways he can hurt you on offense. LeBron, though, I feel like my chances, if you try to, you know, sag off of him and say, all right, you're going to have to jump shoot over me, buddy. And so I think Kawhi would probably be the better. And that's the thing about Giannis. It's like Giannis is impossible to guard for the most part, but at least if you sag off and just stay in front of him.
Force him to shoot.
That's where I think Kawhi kind of is the
nice in between.
Anthony Davis would be a tough draw as well, because he can shoot and come off of that as well. He's very athletic for his size.
So Cole Anthony has to play offense by himself.
Yes, against Syracuse.
But they can play defense.
Right.
All right.
And I think we could make it. Yeah, we could probably make it where, like, North Carolina could have five guys out there on offense, but, like, Cole Anthony can only be the one shoot. Like, he can only shoot.
Okay, different scenario. Who's the most dominant player you've seen that you thought they shouldn't be allowed to play college football? At one point, Football, yes, because it's a little different with basketball. With basketball, we see a lot of, not a lot, but there are a few players every year. Zion was a good case, or it's obvious, were it not for the rules, he would have been in the NBA.
Right.
But in football, that's a lot different, in particular because of the body type. But, like, there are a few cases where you could say this guy at least could have been on a roster, although he probably, like, do you think if the college game was different, more like, you know, soccer leagues around the world where you started at a younger age, like Jadeveon Clowney, could he have started training with the team when he was 17 or 18, even though he wouldn't have been ready to play?
I think he would have. I think he could have played on an NFL team right out of college. I think. I mean,
right out of high school.
Yeah, I think he could. Like, physically, he was that much. That's the thing, is like, you,
there are not
in
many
football,
like,
you have
that
to be physically gifted to that point. Like, Cam would have probably been in it as well.
How many players are there like that? I think it's even, because, you know, there's
many.
Not many in basketball,
not many.
But
no.
There's even fewer in football. Like, Jadeveon Clowney is one that comes to mind.
Just yeah, not we've that, had this discussion before.
Not that many guys are 18 years old and can physically keep up with a 23 or 25 year old in football.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty impressive. I mean, like, I can't think of very much. You have to be very physically gifted to do that.
And baseball's a weird one too, right?
Well, yeah, because, like,
you think about having to work your way through the minors.
Right. You have to have several years as a pro before you can ever really make it to the majors usually. I'll go with, you know, it'd be very interesting to see, like, a guy like Owen Popo. Because of how physically gifted he is already. Like, I think physically he would be able to hang with NFL guys early. It would just be it's the finer details of it. It's the you know, no, playing at a high level.
One whose career didn't actually pan out in the NFL, Trent Richardson, coming out of high school.
Derrick Henry.
Yeah.
Derrick Henry looked like that early.
And but his career is working out.
Yeah, exactly. But it's like, it's very tough, because in football, it's, you got to be physically ahead of the game, because so much of football is experience. So if you're taking that out of the equation, like, so much of football is how much you have done these skills at a very high level against high level competition over and over and over again, and that's how you get better. That's how you get, you know, some guys already have it, but there's a gap.
Have you been at all surprised about some of the backing off of Trevor Lawrence? Like, he's going to be the number one draft pick next year.
Probably. Yeah.
Unless things really go crazy for him badly in the next year. Yeah. But last year, and I think I'd be fascinated if he were the same age as Tua to see what would happen there. I kind of think Trevor would get taken before Tua. But,
right.
Last year, after such an incredible championship game, he was anointed, and there has been somewhat of a backing off of Clemson.
Yeah, he's made some bad throws. He hasn't looked great against. I mean, that's the other thing, is Clemson's not playing high quality competition week in and week out. So it's whenever you aren't just completely blitzing people, you're going to get kind of pointed out at. But man, he's he's got everything you'd want in a quarterback. I would say right off the top. I mean, the fact that he did it at such a young age, the fact that he helped win a national championship at a young age, right, as a freshman. But he's what, 6'5"? He's got an insane arm. He's got pretty good mobility. Like, people think he was the best quarterback prospect ever in terms of like the ranking for the for like in the 24/7 era. So yeah, that's a sophomore slump. He's not going to win the Heisman this year, but I think it's still, the fact of the matter is, he's still a very good quarterback. And we still look, Clemson's going to probably waltz to the playoff. And whatever he does in those playoff games is going to matter way more than him looking bad at one game against North Carolina or something like that.
And the bar being set so ridiculously high after that win last year. 321-1390, join us here on the Lunch Break.
It's also crazy because the competition was between him and Justin Fields. They were in the same class, in the same state. And people were trying to figure out which one was the better quarterback, which one was the better quarterback. And like, whoever won could have been the best quarterback prospect people had ever seen to that point. And then Justin Fields is tearing it up at Ohio State. I mean, what if we see Clemson and Ohio State play?
It'd be fantastic.
To see Lawrence and Fields go head-to-head. I know people want to see Georgia and Ohio State at some point, see Fields go up against Georgia, but I would much rather see Clemson and Ohio State go at each other. Just with, I want to see Lawrence and Fields go head to head.
I'm excited to see Clemson play really good competition, not because I don't think they're ready for it. I think they've proven at this point that
get a really talented roster.
Yeah, it's just going to be a different. I'd be curious to see if the first couple of drives, if they're not used to the game speed and then they adjust accordingly, or if it's just not going to matter. They're so talented, they'll be fine. They'll be certainly, I think, ready for that, as they've all year been called out for having weak opponents.
And you can only play who's on your schedule.
Their problem. I don't think Clemson's problem
like
is Clemson.
Like, A&M was a good Power 5 game, we thought, coming in, and A&M has not been as good as we thought they would be this season, but even still.
It was an exciting win for Auburn fans at the beginning of the season. It was a lot bigger of a deal, and we talked about that yesterday. Why is Penn State not above both Alabama and Clemson? Their resumes are eerily similar.
Right, and it doesn't matter ranking right now whatsoever. Like, it doesn't matter, because if you go undefeated in a power conference and you've been a team that is the defending national champion, you're going to walk into the playoff. Like, Alabama LSU is going to sort itself out. Ohio State, Penn State's going to sort itself out. Clemson's going to be able to pop right in and be like, hey, even if they don't get climb as higher as number three, they're going to be fine. But if you look at Lawrence's numbers this year, he's had, it said 60% or more completion in every game but one. He didn't look great against Syracuse. He's thrown 9 picks this season compared to 23 touchdowns, averaging about 8 yards an attempt. So like, he's having a fine year. It's just not, he's the best quarterback statistically in America right now. But his talent is still very, very impressive. There's no doubt about that whatsoever. He's just throwing a little too many picks. Where is he? He's still top. Yeah, he's 11th in the country in quarterback rating this year. Okay, so like all of this criticism about his passing and you know how good he is. He's 11th in the country in quarterback rating, and he is, he is 15th in touchdowns. So, like, he's still having a really good season. It's just not as good as we thought it would be. But, look, it's hard to compare yourself against Tua Tagovailoa and Joe Burrow this year and Justin Fields on top of it. Like, it's difficult to have to play up to that standard. And he's fine with that, because you'd much rather have a national championship at this point, right?
I think so.
He'll still have a chance. Like, it, he could be fine. That Clemson receiving core is still really good. He's just gonna have to cut down on the mistakes against high level competition. If he does that,
the narrative of him underperforming during the regular season will be long forgotten if they win another national title.
We're forgetting that heading into the season, it was Clemson or Alabama for number one in the country. Okay,
it feels like
Clemson has not lost. Now, they have not looked utterly dominant every single game, and their schedule has gone down, but that doesn't change the fact this is still a very, very talented football team.
I also think the playoff race has gotten more exciting, because if you're one of the fans that's tired...
Well, no one thought LSU and Penn State would be in this spot.
And then throw Ohio State with Justin Fields in the mix, and while I don't think that's a shock to anyone, because of where Ohio State has been over the last 10 to 15 years,
Ohio State might be the most talented team in America.
Yeah, I mean, I think you've got four or five legitimate teams right now that you could make a real case for why you think they're the team that finishes number one this season, and they would all be fine arguments. We've got a lot going on this week, by the way. Coach Pat Dye's show tonight. Benji Rowland joins him. He was, of course, a part of that duo, Rocking and Rolling with Tracy Rocker. So they'll talk some about their time, his time at Auburn with Coach Dye, and then they'll talk a little bit more about that Ole Miss game and looking ahead to the final month of the season. We've also got Missouri-Georgia for you this Saturday, and a doubleheader Giants and Jets at noon Sunday, Rams-Steelers following that on Sunday. More ESPN 106.7 in the lunch break after this.
Like us on Facebook at ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back to the Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7. Justin Ferguson, Painter Sharpless. Painter, a little Auburn news that we haven't hit on yet.
Okay.
Auburn football is going to play South Alabama at some time in the future, 2026 to be exact. The Tigers are playing South Alabama, so an in-state FBS team. First time since, I guess, Auburn played UAB a while back, but it's going to be the first time in a while Auburn is playing a non-FCS team from the state. Go ahead, lay it on us, Painter.
This is from AL.com. Auburn hosts South Alabama in football in 2025. Will take place September 13th at Jordan-Hare Stadium. And as you just mentioned, the Tigers have not faced an in-state FBS school other than Alabama since beating UAB 29-0 to open the 1996 season. That from Craig Stevenson of AL.com.
Who knows what South Alabama looks like between now and then? I thought they ran off Joey Jones, a little too early. And then they hired Steve Campbell from Central Arkansas. And they just hadn't quite clicked under them. But 6 years from now, who knows how many coaches USA is going to be on by then.
Same thing for Auburn.
Not true. But I find that this would be very interesting. Auburn has played UAB in the past. Now they're going to play South Alabama. The question is, Painter, will they ever play Troy? Yeah, I'm still like
a little risky,
because like I don't think you schedule UAB right now. Like you better be glad you caught UAB when you caught him, I guess, if you're going through, let's check them off the list. Troy would be.
They had their own little scare with a different level school in Jack State, and that's a school that's had its own fair share of success. And look, Auburn was down that year, and they had a lot of issues, but I don't know.
Let's be clear. They'll never do this, and they probably have no reason to do this. But I find it would be interesting to see if Auburn scheduled two for ones with UAB, South Alabama, and Troy. So that one game, it's kind of like what they do in basketball, that people from in the Mobile area down in that area can go watch an Auburn game without having to drive all the way up here.
Like, if one of those teams could consistently...
Glad Peoples is decently sized. It's a horrible stadium,
so
but
Florida entertained that idea
with UCF,
and UCF has become, at least over the last few seasons, a staple of the top 25.
Well, once Birmingham gets this new stadium for UAB, and then Troy. I mean, like Troy, if you've ever been to the Vet, like it's a smaller stadium, but like it would be interesting to see what that crowd would be like if you have Troy fans and Auburn fans, and there's overlap there, but also I think you would have a ton of Troy fans who are also Alabama fans that would be just charged up for that game. Same thing if you played it at UAB, same thing if you played it at South Alabama. I think it'd be a fun atmosphere. They'll never do it, but I think it'd be a fun atmosphere.
It would be wild.
Like, in a year where you're hosting your big Power 5 game, like the year you host Baylor or Penn State or Cal or UCLA, go play at South. We talked about this in the past about doing a 2-for-1 for like with like Tulane, Houston. What was the other one? Memphis also made sense there with these group of five schools that are, you know, would be good environments to be in. Like, you know, Painter, it wasn't hard for me to sell you on the fact Auburn should play a 2-for-1 with Tulane, right? Go play in that on-campus stadium in New Orleans.
I personally, for my own non-altruistic, totally selfish weekend reasons, would enjoy that excuse.
Yeah, so I think it would be fun. It'll never happen, but it would be fun. I would love to see. I would love to be in the environment for an Auburn Troy game in Troy. I would love to see what that would look like.
It would. You mean, you know? I think
as someone who's been to plenty of games for both teams, like I would love to see what that environment would look like.
I think you would have more Troy fans than Auburn fans, and I think a big part of that would be the Alabama fan base wearing Troy colors and also wearing their Alabama gear.
Oh yeah, because that area of the state. Well. It's no secret. Most areas of the state are Alabama territory. Like, there are pockets where Auburn is well represented, but...
And mostly that pocket is Auburn.
That pocket is Auburn. And then when you get into Opelika, it's back to Alabama territory.
Pretty
again. But, no, it's interesting because that area of the country, there's a ton of Alabama fans. Like, it is a big... It's big Alabama territory, so it would be funny to see that environment. And also there would also be the thing that would crack me up would be the amount of people who are like not fans of either team but just fans of Troy. It's just like, yeah, we're just happy that Troy's playing them. It's like, well, this is gonna be a little bit bigger than you, but I think it would be fun. It would never happen.
Justin, the low on Friday is in the 30s.
I don't like that.
Sweater season is upon us.
Good luck.
Not turning back.
Good luck. You're going to be
on the field.
You're going to be on the field for the Auburn High game.
Microphone makes your hand cold.
Yeah.
Not pleasant.
Do you not have a
time to get some gloves?
Yeah, I was about to say, get some gloves. Get some of those gloves that you can use your phone on through. Those are clutch.
Does anyone else find hand warmers to be wonderful?
They're great.
Does anyone find them to be annoying, you think?
I don't know.
Pretty great.
I like them invention. A lot. I like them a lot. Also, speaking of college football scheduling,
hand warmers in college football.
We were talking about the scheduling with Auburn and South Alabama. The another announcement today: Georgia's playing Ohio State in a home and home in 2030 and 2031. That's a long way off. It's a long way off. That's okay. I want to point this out though, real quick. Georgia's schedule in the future. They play two Power 5 games every year, right? Because Georgia Tech is a Power 5 team. So, at least in name only right now. Next year, they play Virginia. 2022, they play Oregon. 2023, they play Oklahoma. 2024, they play in Clemson. 25 and 26, UCLA. 27-28 at Florida State. Here's where the things get interesting. With this schedule right now, in 2027, 2028, 2029, and 2030, in addition to playing Georgia Tech, Georgia plays two other Power 5 teams. They play Florida State and Texas in 2028, Texas and Clemson in 2029, Clemson and Ohio State in 2030, and Oklahoma and Ohio State in 2031. That is a brutal schedule. But here's the thing. They're not alone. If you look at the way ahead schedules right now in college football, there are teams that look like they're lining something up. We just said that they're 2028 to 2031. Georgia's going to play three Power mm-hmm. 5 teams. All right. Well, they play Georgia Tech every year. So just forget that real quick. So multiple power, like two other Power 5 teams in those years. In 2025 and 2026, Alabama plays Florida State and Wisconsin, and then they play West Virginia and Florida State. All right? Painter, it looks like to me teams are anticipating the playoff to expand. And when that happens, the big deal is not going to be did you win your conference, did you win your division. It's going to be how tough was your schedule and were you good enough at the end. So if we go to an 8-team field or a 6-team field or whatever, this is going to be a big thing. And it already looks like teams are getting ready to beef up their schedule in the future after this whole four-team format, the contract runs out at whatever it is several years down the line.
It feels like a dirty secret that's not really a secret that everyone knows it's this four-team playoff won't last.
So here's my question. Does Auburn get in on this? Because I don't know if this is going to be a move that they're going to make, but it's worth noting that their two biggest rivals are beefing up their schedules, right?
Yeah, I mean, Nick Saban has been very vocal about wanting to go to a 9-game conference, look, he's not worried.
I don't think that's as big of a deal as getting a better 9-conference schedule.
Agreed, but I think he has not shied away from the conversation that he wants to play the best teams, that he is not afraid to schedule teams, that he is not afraid to take FCS schools off the schedule.
Right.
And I don't think Kirby Smart, particularly with the way he can recruit, would be either.
All right, so Auburn has their schedule set for the next 3 years. They're going to play Alcorn State, North Carolina, Southern Miss, and UMass in 2020. They'll play Akron, Penn State, Georgia State, Alabama State in 2021. I forgot that Georgia State game. Mercer, San Jose State, Penn State, and Western Kentucky in 2022. 2023, they still have a spot open, and then a lot of spots open in the future after that. So starting in 2023, if they wanted to schedule another Power 5 game, this is where you can start doing it. And this is about a little bit earlier, but this would be around the time when Alabama does it, and then Georgia does it a little bit later, and adding their third. Oh, boy. You good?
Excuse me.
Yeah, that was that. I think that picked up on my mic.
That's disgusting.
Yeah, sorry about that.
I'll take a fine.
Okay, my question is like, will Auburn get tougher? Because the thing about Auburn is, like, they always say, look, our conference is tough every year. We have our schedule's tough every year. No one else has to play Alabama, Georgia, and LSU. So I don't know if they're going to be necessarily gung-ho about getting another good team on their schedule, but they might. Their hand might be forced, I think. And it also gives me an excuse to pitch our idea that we came up with for scheduling in college football for Auburn and for all SEC teams, which is what, Painter?
Pods.
18 pod pods. SEC. Play two Power 5 teams.
Pods.
Play two Power 5 teams. Play a group of 5 team. Play an FCS team. That's a perfect 12-game schedule. My question now is, there's a reason for Auburn to go to that. Will they do it?
Pods.
Listen to the Lunch Break on the Abbey Award-winning ESPN 106.7 app.
Welcome back to the Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7. Justin Ferguson, Painter Sharpless. Remember, the podcast of the Lunch Break, presented by University Ace Hardware, available at ESPNAU.com and the ESPN 106.7 Podcast Center, SoundCloud, iTunes, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. University Ace is your Auburn helpful place, located next to the movie theater here in Auburn.
So, here we are. In the Key of Auburn studio.
Mm-hmm.
Rolling along, I might add.
Rolling along here in the Key of Auburn studio. I've now got that idea of the two-for-ones with the in-state schools planted into my head, and now it's not going away. Like, I want to see that happen. It's not going to. It's not going to. It's not going to. It's not going to. I want to see that happen.
321-1390, join us on the show today. Baker Mayfield's mustache has been in the news a lot more than I think it
right,
should be.
Yeah, yeah.
It is odd that he shaved that many times in one day, but I also, how do we feel, by the way, about Baker Mayfield? The season has gone the way a lot of fans of the NFL hoped it would. I was indifferent to the Browns' success this year. I thought if they're fun, good for the fan base. If they're not good, then we get to laugh at them for talking a lot of noise this offseason.
Yeah, and Baker has been bad. Like, he just has not been good. Now, his offensive line's not great, and it just, I don't know what Freddie Kitchens is doing on offense with them, but it's just, he has not been good. He has not done well enough. I was looking at, somebody had a stat yesterday that he has a worse quarterback rating without pressure than Lamar Jackson does under pressure this season. And which one of those was supposed to be the guy who had to move to running back, and which one of those was the guy that was the number one pick and the Heisman Trophy winner?
Well, one of them definitely had more talent than the other in college, and I'm not down and out on Baker.
No. I think, but yeah.
The narrative has certainly shifted over the last 3 months.
That's my thing with quarterbacks. When you're drafting in the NFL, do you want to get the guy that was surrounded by the best talent, relatively speaking? Because at Oklahoma, Baker had the best offensive line in America when he played, and that helped him out tremendously. And he also had really good receivers with him as well. So do you want to take a chance on that guy? Or not, you don't take a chance on that guy. That's the number one guy. But do you want to get that guy over the guy who might have had to do more in college to help his team to win because he didn't have as great of a supporting cast like a Lamar Jackson? Like a Patrick Mahomes, if you want to go back, like Aaron Rodgers and Drew Brees were when they came out of college from Cal and Purdue. It's very interesting, and that's the whole thing with me and Tua Tagovailoa this upcoming draft class. Like, I think Tua is an outstanding quarterback. There's no denying his talent. It's going to be very interesting, though, that he has played with an Alabama receiving corps that
Nick Saban said it's the best they've had.
It's the best they've had.
I think it's easy
to see. His offensive line is really good, always really, really good. So what happens when he goes to the Bengals or the Dolphins? And you're now in a spot where your line play is nowhere near as good as it was, relatively speaking, to what you got at Alabama. And your wide receiving core is not going to be the best in the country. So like, what does that look like? Is Tua going to be the quarterback to bring that team's talent level up? Or is he a little too reliant on the talent around him? Now, to be fair, I think he's still the best quarterback on the board. But then the other question people are going to have is, like, what about Justin Herbert? All the tools in the world, but has he been that really dominant force, you know, consistently as a quarterback? And he really hasn't. So it's the question about how is he going to do? It's very interesting to me how all this is going to shake out, because as we get into these things where the best quarterbacks in the country are consolidating at these really big programs, and if it doesn't work out, they'll transfer to Oklahoma or transfer to Ohio State or whatever. What is that going to look like? What does Trevor Lawrence look like when he's no longer having to throw to, you know, guys like Justin Ross and T. Higgins? What does this look like for Ohio? What does Justin Fields look like without J.K. Dobbins and K.J. Hill and that insane amount of talent they've got at Ohio State? It's a valid question. And the other thing is that this year you've seen such a separation, I think, in college football of the talent and the best players all being in the peak, that we're not really seeing a ton of players that are – who is the Lamar Jackson? Who is the Patrick Mahomes of this class? I don't think you have one. I think – like, it depends on how you feel about Joe Burrow. And even with Joe Burrow, LSU's receivers are really, really good. So it's a fascinating thing. It's like, how do you determine – what you're going to do if you're going to invest a first-round draft pick and a high one at that in a quarterback for your future? Because you've just seen in the NFL go with tools and get Mitchell Trubisky over Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes.
And they're different, right, in that Watson was around pretty elite talent. Maybe not to what they've stockpiled at this point, but he's still obviously. And
Lamar was the fifth in his – the Lamar Jackson was the fifth in his class, and that was a class that had Baker. That was a class that had – who else was in that class, a quarterback? Josh Allen. That was a
– Rosen.
Rosen and
– Darnold.
And Darnold. Yeah, those are the four. And so I think it's safe to say that I don't – I think it's safe to say that those four are probably not going to be better than Lamar Jackson. Like, they can probably get to his level, but – I'm going to bank on the fact that those four guys aren't going to be necessarily better than him. So after you do that, if you're an NFL team, do you start to get scared a little bit of like, oh, do we need to obsess over tools as much? Or just go get the really good football player and figure it out later?
Time now for What's On Tonight.
The answer is I don't know.
I think it's totally possible that often we don't know what we're watching.
Like, I think in this class, if you're not getting Tua, and if you're not completely sold on Tua, wait till next year. Pick between Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields.
Yeah, you feel safer there.
Right.
Either of those options.
Like, Jake Fromm and Jacob Eason are probably going to be coming out of this class. I don't know what in the world to think about either of those guys as NFL prospects. I have no idea. No idea whatsoever. Speaking of the NFL, Fox, what's on tonight? 7:20 tonight, Thursday Night Football, Chargers Raiders.
Are you excited? Do you care?
AFC action.
I mean, the Chargers have been more disappointing than we expected at this point.
They beat the Packers last
week, right? And then they had that happen, and the Raiders have actually
are just there. I mean, they're
not garbage, which was they were a punching bag
in
the offseason, and at least now at this point,
and they're still in the wild card mix. I think like the Chiefs are probably going to take the AFC West, but I don't see where. Yeah, I don't see where the Broncos aren't going
to
be.
Do you have to be impressed with John Gruden? Because it doesn't. I mean, that doesn't feel like a roster that is overbearing or impressive. And it's not like their record is either, by the way.
Yeah, the
but
fact that the Raiders
are no longer a punchline.
Yeah, they're a middle of the road team in the NFL right now, which I think is it's improvement. And I guess that's where you want to be before you head to Las Vegas on a big money move. TNT tonight, the NBA doubleheader, 7 o'clock. We've got Celtics and Hornets. Painter, Kemba Walker returns to Charlotte after leaving them for the Celtics. Wonder what that reaction is going to be like, because he's clearly been their best player since the basketball came back to Charlotte. He's been by far the best player they've had.
I don't want to hear any booing or any.
Like, I don't think you're going
to
get it.
He, I thought, was nothing but loyal to a team that did nothing to help its own case. And
so bad they drafted so poorly.
Between it being a smaller market and the team doing themselves no favors to surround him with other talent, like, can you blame him for going to an area that's extremely passionate about its basketball and that will constantly have eyes on its team? I don't think you can.
And that's the thing, though. That's the thing, though, Painter, is that Charlotte loves basketball. North Carolina is a basketball state. They just have not had a pro team that...
I don't think it's really the fans' unwillingness. No. I think simply bad mismanagement.
I think if you're objective about his goals,
you have to understand his move to Boston.
Yep. 9:30, Trailblazers, Clippers, Kawhi and the gang taking on Damian Lillard.
Do you like Dame's new, relatively new ESPN commercial? Usually those are pretty funny. I thought it left me wanting more.
Their last few have been a little lame, I thought. It's not as good as it used to be, man. All right, college football night at ESPNU at 6:30. Louisiana Lafayette taking on Coastal Carolina. A little fun belt action for you. ESPN, the main event tonight, South Florida and Temple. AAC Thursday night action. College basketball.
Hoops. Greg Peterson tomorrow, by the way, the machine.
Not a whole lot on tonight after the first two big nights, but you get Big Ten Network at 6, Bryant and Rutgers.
Yeah, we got doused in some CBB the last 2 days.
Then followed at ACC Network by a little in-state rivalry, Painter, 6 o'clock, Presbyterian against Clemson. Blue Hose.
Wow.
Presbyterian going at it. All right. The Dan Peck Memorial HO pick of the evening.
R.I.P. Dan, we love you, don't we? Oh, how we love you.
Pizza, wings, and waffles. Pizza, wings, and waffles.
It's as if he's walking away.
It's the ghost of Dan Peck. HBO Zone at 11:10. I can't believe I've seen, like, this movie popped up. I haven't thought about this movie, I think, since I watched it. You ready? Bruce Almighty.
Oh! And where is that one based from? Or where is that movie set in, anyway?
I don't remember.
Buffalo.
Oh!
Yes!
Go Bills.
Jim Carrey, friend of the program.
Friend of the program, Jim Carrey, and the Buffalo Bills. Finally, Painter, HGTV. We've got you going on at 9 o'clock tonight. House Hunters International is in Vieques, Puerto Rico. I think I pronounced that right. Could be Vieques, Puerto Rico. We're back in Puerto Rico.
Excellent.
Big time to be in Puerto Rico, folks.
Don't go anywhere. We've got more Lunch Break. Hour 2 coming up. Stay with us. Please.
Waverly, Auburn Opelika sports leader, ESPN 106.7, a broadcast service of Auburn Network Incorporated.
Justin?
Yep.
Auburn's not playing at home tomorrow. Not in basketball.
No, you tried to...
Tried to promo something that wasn't happening.
Yeah, they're playing in Maryland, in Annapolis.
Just saw a picture.
Yeah, they're...
Andy Burcham says they're at the academy.
Mm-hmm. Learning how to...
stand tall and straight.
Steer ships. All that stuff.
Samir Dowdy, your captain.
There's video of them holding guns.
I'm assuming that's Javon McCormick. Standing next to what looks like Dangell Purifoy, but you can't tell because they've got their... Well, it looks like if this is Dangell, that he's got on some sort of body armor and a helmet covering the better part of his eyes. I don't see how he can... looks like they're having a good time, whatever it is they're doing. Are these paintball guns? Or are these guns that don't fire? Are they actual guns that could mean that Auburn could be without one of its key players?
Friendly fire at the United States Naval Academy.
You hate to see it.
But yes, Auburn.
Looks like they're having fun, though.
Auburn Davidson at Navy's campus will be tomorrow. Part of the Memorial, or it's Veterans Day, my bad. Veterans Day. I should know it's Veterans Day, not Memorial Day. We've got four commercials in that last break talking about it. I should have known. Veterans Day is part of that thing they've got going on. A few Under Armour schools coming to Annapolis to be a part of that. So Auburn is already, they left yesterday. And getting ready for a Davidson team. We'll talk about that tomorrow. Davidson, if you know anything about Davidson basketball, is they'll shoot and they'll be very tough to handle. Very experienced. The prototypical annoying mid-major team that you just hate to play against.
Do you think, much like Kansas and Toto, that Davidson is tired of being associated only with Steph Curry?
No, they're
cool with it.
Because what else are they going to be associated with?
I don't know.
I mean,
just wondered if they're like, hey, we've got a lot more than just the great and powerful Steph Curry. I'm not defending it. I'm just wondering if they, you know, are like, hey, we are a robust university. We have lots of.
They're one of like 40 Baptist schools in North Carolina. You got to find a way to differentiate yourselves, and they've got it with
one of the best basketball players in the world.
Exactly. So I don't think they should be complaining about that, and they aren't probably.
I guess Auburn fans don't get too tired of people thinking about Cam Newton or Tim Cook
or Bo Jackson
Auburn.
Or Charles Barkley.
Tend to take those in stride.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you'll feel good about that. Speaking of Auburn, last night. Auburn women's team got their season off to a good start, held on for a win over a very good Wofford team that might be in the NCAA tournament next season, or this season rather. So Auburn scored 86 in that game. Like, not very often last season were they able to put up that many points. I think the newcomers and just the experience coming back on this team were able to get this offense a real shot in the arm.
The cutest member of the beat, Mark Murphy, has... let us know with Inside the Auburn Tigers. It's not even close, folks, if you want to be honest. Logan, maybe, but I don't think so. I'm going with Mark. Unique Thompson posted a double-double. She continues to play strong. Another good start. Though for Auburn, you're right. 84-82 Wednesday night. The Tigers squandered a 17-point lead. But like you said, they held on. And at least get the win to start the season off
against
nice.
Against a Wofford team that is probably going to win the SoCon this year. So... good win, good solid win to get things started for Auburn at home. By the way, because people like to point this out, the University of Alabama's women's team lost to Hampton last night. So the Auburn basketball teams are combined 2-0. The Alabama basketball teams are combined 0-2.
People are getting their shots in at Alabama right now. I wonder if they'll be able to do that after the game on Saturday. And I think right now the answer until LSU does it is probably no.
Right. Okay, so let's talk about it. Do you think LSU's going to win this game?
Yeah, but
I don't.
I'm going to say no until they win. Like, I'm going to pick Alabama against my gut for a couple of reasons. One, they just keep winning against LSU.
They're at home.
And they haven't had a big home game. I don't know when the last big home game was. It wasn't last year.
When was the
year?
Last time Alabama lost at home? It's been a long time. It's been a long time.
Ole Miss, probably.
Yeah.
Is that in 14 or 15?
It's 14 or 15, I think. But like, it's been a long time since Alabama's lost a home game, and LSU looks good, and that's great. But that's going to be a tough matchup for LSU. That crowd, that environment against a defense at Alabama that I think better of Alabama's defense than I think of LSU's defense this season. I could be wrong there, but I feel like it's going to be two outstanding offenses going at it, but I just like Alabama at home.
And the news coming out of Tuscaloosa seems to be that, all things considered, with the recency of Tua's leg injury, that he's progressing farther than some people expect him to be. And
it's a miracle. I mean, this happens every time Alabama has an injury concern. It's like, hey, no, actually, he's good. We're going to play him. So
321-1390, Russell on the line. Join us. Follow along at ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, the ESPN 106.7 app. Russell, the floor is yours.
All right, update, guys. Mama and baby are great.
Yes, congrats. I was about to ask that.
Everything's great.
Awesome.
Great, good, yep.
Very good.
Everything's good. So let's move on.
All right.
Alabama LSU, what y'all are talking about.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, man. I'm kind of a painter. I kind of think in my gut LSU's probably going to win, but I wouldn't bet against Alabama right now.
No.
If I had to pick the game, I'd pick Alabama to win, obviously. But another reason why I'm kind of hesitant on picking Alabama would be because what's the toughest game they've played so far?
Right. Right.
Yeah, you have some sort of measuring stick with LSU playing Auburn and Texas.
And the answer is A&M.
And see, yeah. We've seen this from Alabama before. If you remember at the end of 2017, they really hadn't played anybody. And when they got to Auburn, it was like Auburn was on a roll and, you know, we kind of did what we wanted to against them. And then you know, Georgia beat them in the SEC championship game and – it was kind of like they hadn't played anybody. Now, they did end up winning the national championship, which is kind of like, whoa, you know, they're a really good team. But even last year, look at what – their schedule was a joke last year. And they didn't really play anybody. And then they got in the playoffs and, you know, yeah, they won their first game. But they played a really good Clemson team that, I mean, I guess you could argue was a little bit more – had a little bit tougher road to get to than Alabama, but – that's the only thing that worries me about picking Alabama. You know, like, I'm not trying to hate on them. Of course I hate Alabama, but because I'm an Auburn fan. I've always been an Auburn fan. I don't like them. But I'm just trying to be, like, in a centrist here. Try and just look at it from, you know, like Justin's point of view. Let's look at it neutrally and say, is Alabama really going to win? I mean, yes, they're at home. That's an advantage. But if Tua is hurt and he re-injures himself in the game,
I don't think
they win. And then also, they really haven't been tested. I mean, that defense really hasn't been tested by a good offense. And so we've seen flashes of people making plays against the defense, and they really haven't played against anybody that's top-notch, you know, caliber. And Joe Burrow, I mean, this guy, he goes into Tuscaloosa and wins.
Oh yeah,
he might as well win the Heisman right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, seriously, guys, because they're going to be in Atlanta, and regardless of how that game goes, I think Joe Burrow wins the Heisman. They win the game Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, you would have to be so impressed with what LSU does if they can go and beat Alabama on the road with a quarterback and an offense that it would just be everything clicked for them at the right time. They got Joe Brady and getting him with Steve Ensminger and meshing that offense and Burrow. You know, turning the corner and improving so much in the offseason and being in a system that really fits him and all those wide receivers coming together, that offensive line playing better, it would be really impressive if they go off and do it. If they do it, man, I'm with you. Put his name on the trophy. I don't see how anybody knocks him off this season, but it's still the whole thing is just in the back of my mind, though. It's Alabama at home, man. Like, that is so tough to deal with. But I will agree with you. If Tua is not 100%, oh, I don't think he has to be 100% because no one's going to be 100%. But if Tua is not good, they're going to have a hard time because I think you know it's been really hard to slow down that that offense from LSU. Auburn did its best and still gave up a lot of yards.
Right. Okay, and I'm going to leave you guys with this. And like I said, I'll hang up and listen.
Mm-hmm.
Braves made some moves.
Yep.
I don't know if y'all have talked about it or seen it, but we got Nick Markakis is coming back. They did a little financial situation there where they went on and bought their contract out, him and Tyler Flowers, for $2 million and then signed them to a $4 million deal, which ends up being their option of $6 million. So it takes $4 million off of the payroll for next year.
Yep.
You see what I'm saying? So Markakis and Flowers back. Of course, y'all know I love Markakis.
Mm-hmm.
They're not planning on playing him every day right now. They're going to platoon him in left field more than likely. But y'all saw how this year went. You get injuries, the guy's probably going to end up playing a lot more than you think he is, which is good. I like Nick Markakis, so I think he's going
to
help.
And also imagine him being able to use him off the bench in a pinch hitting role. Like a guy who is such a pure hitter, it would be huge.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's a great point. That's a great bat to have come off in a pinch. So
for sure.
And then they made a qualifying offer to Josh Donaldson, and they let Julio go. They did not pick up Julio. So Julio will not be back with the Braves next year.
Yeah.
You know, there's only five pitchers in the franchise's history that have more strikeouts than Julio. That's amazing.
Right, yeah. But, the longevity was crazy with him.
Right, but the qualifying offer to Josh Donaldson was just short of $18 million per year. Of course, he's not going to take that. But I would imagine that the Braves are going to make a run at him. I don't see how you let him go after watching him play, especially defensively last year.
Like,
the guy is just phenomenal defensively. And then for that bat, to lose that bat in the middle of your lineup, you're going to have to go find somebody else, whether it be an outfielder or another third baseman. And there's no way, guys, we're going to compete with anybody to get Rendon. I mean, you can pipe dream all you want to about putting Anthony Rendon in that lineup. That guy is going to make so much money. It's going to be absolutely ridiculous. Him, Gerrit Cole, and Steven Strasburg are about to blow it out of the water as far as contracts. Because you thought we saw some contracts from Machado and Harper last year?
Oh, yeah.
You're about to see some more contracts that are going to look – you're going to look up and say, wow, these guys – are absolutely making bank next year because they all had great seasons. I mean, they all had seasons better than Bryce Harper. I mean, like before going into free agency, Bryce Harper and Manny Machado, neither one of them had the seasons that either one of those three guys had last year. So I think you're going to look up and say, wow, these are some crazy numbers being thrown out. But I really expect the Braves to make maybe a three-year run, maybe try and get a three-year deal. I know Donaldson wants four, but I think maybe you'll see him try and get a three-year deal worked out with Donaldson, hopefully. Keep our fingers crossed. Hey, appreciate you taking the call. We'll talk again. War Eagle.
Appreciate it, Russell, as always. It's going to be very interesting to see what the Braves end up doing because there's some big-name free agents on the market, and maybe they don't get the top of the market guys, but there might be some other ones. And I'm very interested to see what they do in the outfield next year. You know, you bring Markakis back. You still, I mean, of course, Acuna is going to be that building block. You've got so many young prospects that they really like, Christian Pache out in the outfield that they like. If you bring back Donaldson, do you leave Austin Riley out there? There's some good. Mookie Betts is going to be a free agent this year. Like it's going to be really interesting to see who gets who. I mean, guys like Gerrit Cole and Rendon and Strasburg are all going to probably get just absurd amounts of money from these teams that are so rich, like the ones on the West Coast probably. So it's going to be interesting to see.
321-1390. Thanks for the call, Russell. Follow along at ESPN 106.7. And, of course, you can do so on your smart device, powered by Point Broadband. The Drive live from Kia of Auburn tomorrow on Friday. And we are live in the Kia of Auburn studio, taking a break from some football and basketball to talk more about baseball. And we'll also take your call, 321-1390. First break here in hour number two. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about this Auburn Hoops team and what they've got in store against Davidson.
Listen to the Lunch Break on your smartphone or tablet with the free ESPN 106.7 app.
Ladies and gentlemen, Kia of Auburn. Kia of Auburn on South College. With brand new Kias, including 2020 Kia Telluride, built in West Point, Georgia.
Kia of Auburn! Kia of Auburn! Kia of Auburn! Kia of Auburn.com! Kia of A-U-B!
This is Coach Pat Dye. Kia of Auburn, you are always number one.
Farmers Insurance knows that when you're in the car and that song comes on, yes, that's the one, you have no choice but to pull out your imaginary drumsticks and smash those cymbals and stomp on that kick pedal, which unfortunately is the accelerator pedal. And we covered it. Talk to a farmer's agent who knows a thing or two because they've seen a thing or two.
We are farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Underwritten by Farmers Truck Fire Insurance Exchanges and Affiliates. Products not available in every state.
Call Tim Jones, your farmer's insurance agent. 826-6888. This Veterans Day, the Orthopedic Clinic, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, reminds you that every time our nation's liberty has been threatened, American men and women have come to her defense. They sacrificed to make sure our freedom was preserved. The Orthopedic Clinic salutes the veterans of this community and asks you to pause and reflect on the sacrifices made by men and women in defense of our liberty. The Orthopedic Clinic in Auburn and Opelika asks you to join them in remembering why we observe Veterans Day.
What's my story? I just got my first auto loan from Max. They are unlike any financial institution you'll ever deal with, mostly because of people like Miss Sarah.
He was so proud he must have saved 3 years to buy that thing.
I saved for 3 years, but Max helped make it happen.
Well, buying a car is a big decision. It's personal. So when someone like Justin needs a loan consultant, I take that very personally.
Everybody at Max was great. I had a ton of questions about my loan.
Oh, he asked a lot of questions, all right.
Max gave me lots of options, and Miss Sarah helped explain every detail. Now I know I can trust her with anything.
And when he drove that thing up here to show me, I felt like I was the one with a new big block V8 seventh generation square body pickup with 33-inch mud grip tires and a 6-inch lift kit.
Thanks, Max, for being an amazing financial institution. And thank you for Miss Sarah.
Come see us at 336 North Gay Street, Auburn, or at 3021 Frederick Road in Opelika. We'd love to hear your story. Max, smart money made simple. Certain restrictions apply for qualified borrowers.
Our intern's running around trying to catch Justin in this police chase scene from the late 1970s. Someone out there has on their Baker Mayfield mustache. Shadow's on the line. 321-1390. Shadow has changed up his routine ever so slightly, but he says he's going to keep us on our toes. So, Shadow, please do so starting now.
Well, look, I ain't got no pattern. Like Gus Malzahn, you know, it ain't like that when I send certain men on the field that you know what's coming. You know, I don't want y'all to get too comfortable. Okay. I want to kind of stick and move, you know what I mean?
Yeah, a little R2-L2, down, down.
Well, hey, listen, let's talk a little basketball. Right. Tell me about Sharif Cooper.
Sharif Cooper is, if he ends up coming to Auburn, which he's fully committed and signing day's not too far around the corner, be the best prospect Auburn's ever had. He's an outstanding point guard, very good scorer at all levels, can drive inside, also a good three-point shooter, very well connected in the AAU scene. Auburn's got a chance at some really good prospects to join him, other five-stars, because of Sharif Cooper. So he's a guy that can help take your program to the next level for sure, Shadow.
Did I hear you just say that he was signed already?
He's committed. He hasn't signed yet.
When does that come?
Signing day is not too far away, but I think it's a few weeks from now in that first team. But he'll be, if everything goes according to plan and Auburn expects it to, he will be on the team next year.
November 13th.
So it's coming right up next week.
Okay, so y'all promised me he's not going to end up going to some rival.
No, Shadow, but I mean, I do.
I would be very surprised. Yeah. I'll give you 95% he's going to end up going to Auburn.
Okay, how about this? How about if he goes somewhere else, y'all owe me a steak dinner?
All right, if he goes somewhere else, I'll owe you a steak dinner.
Me, you, O'Charlie's, near Tigertown?
There we go.
Would you come, Shadow? Would you actually show – would you let me buy you dinner?
I think I'm getting a reputation as somebody who wins steak dinners, but they don't show up. But I just want you to know that ain't true.
Hey, if you are correct and Sharif Cooper does not commit or does not sign with Auburn, Shadow, I will happily, you and me, we go talk it out at O'Charlie's over a filet or whatever kind of steak it is you're into. Are you a medium rare guy? I'm medium rare plus.
Medium. I used to be a steakhouse manager in Florida, and the best way to cook a steak is medium. All you people out there that's been burning your steaks up, y'all making a mistake. Look here now. I'm really excited about Bruce Pearl. I just tell you what, man, when he starts talking, I just get excited. Do you agree with that or no?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
I mean, just something about this man. I'm telling you what, he has stood tall through all the challenges, and He's just a heck of a teacher of basketball. And I, you know, I mean, I didn't like all the turnovers the other night, but they're just, I got a hope, guys. Now, listen, I know y'all think I've got to be a little bit negative about Malzahn, but I'm just telling you, when I sit and listen to Malzahn, I don't have the kind of hope that I have when I'm talking to Bruce. Now, y'all explain that to me.
I think it's good reason. I mean,
yeah,
the guy.
It's completely different personalities. And I think Malzahn's very much a guy that when he speaks to the media or he speaks to fans directly through the media, it's just never. That's just not his personality. Whereas Bruce Pearl, former media guy, big time into promoting a program. He's got that basketball coaches are usually more like that than football coaches. But yeah, it's a very big difference in personality. And Malzahn's one of those guys where if you're going to get hope from him, it's going to be from, you know, his actual production on the field.
Auburn has hired some fine, even good basketball minds, but I don't think they've ever had someone who could sell a program. And that's exactly what they needed without the history.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, based on what you saw the other night, and I know it ain't much, but are we going to the big dance again?
I think this is a tournament team for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, now, the one who has been blowing everybody's mind because he hadn't come through like he should have, I want somebody to tell me, I mean, listen, I ain't seen Mr. Wiley do nothing yet.
Well, my thing with Wiley is that he has missed a lot of time, injuries, and stuff like that as well. But, yeah, it's just he's a great rebounder. He's a great rebounder. His offensive game, he has the potential, and Bruce said it the other night, he could have scored 30 points in that game. He's just got to be able to get better with his hands.
Does he give y'all the appearance sometimes? I watch him, and I love watching players. But does Wiley give you the appearance of a freaking bull in a china shop?
sometimes he can
kind of
give that.
Yeah, I can see that, especially at times. You know, we've talked about one of the weaknesses of his game, and Justin, you've highlighted that sometimes handling passes can be difficult and it can look sloppy. On the other hand, there are times where he does things shadow, like he'll effectively employ a drop step or he'll be very physical. I think it's a positive.
I want to see a little bit of silky smooth, but what I always see is a lot of Stone Age.
Well, you know, that's something that they've really had to really work with him on. But, yeah, the finesse part of his game, I think he's got some good post moves. It's just, you know, going to be better around the basket is going to be a big concern. It's concern
well, you
with
know,
him.
I think that the big men we got, I'm going to tell you what now, I think we got the potential to do some things. I'm excited about our big men. I'm excited about Okoro.
Yeah.
I think that the guard play, now I got to tell you, I was a little disappointed because I saw a little bit of showboat in them guards we got, but I did see some good things. I'm hopeful about this team. Look over yonder at the women, man.
Yeah.
I mean, they've been going to the tournament. You know, is it possible? Could the shadow be right or wrong in the fact that could it be that our football program is the worst thing we got?
You know, right now it's behind the basketball program for sure. It's behind the baseball program for going to the College World Series. So I don't know about the worst sport on campus, but it's definitely got. I mean, they are number 11 in the country, but we'll see. They got it. You got to finish off in better games. Appreciate the call, Shadow. Thank you for teaching us how we're supposed to cook our steaks and a little and basketball analysis from him. I like basketball, Shadow.
And
I want to hear more from basketball.
He's
Shadow.
Liking the his charisma comes out. Bruce Pearl infectious. In more ways than one. More lunch break after this.
Welcome back to the lunch break on ESPN 106.7. Justin Ferguson, Painter Sharpless. Appreciate the call from Shadow. Appreciate the call from Russell.
Basketball analysis and a little bit of steak chatter. I'm going medium rare plus. He says medium.
What is a medium rare plus?
A snooty way of saying just slightly less than medium, kind of in between medium
just
rare.
Just say medium rare. There's five options.
I like medium rare, but if they're going to be particular, if I'm going to be particular, you know.
Just say medium rare. Or just say medium.
No. I won't be stopped.
I'm telling you, you order a steak medium rare plus. Have you done that before?
Yes.
Okay, you've eaten spit. Yes, you have definitely eaten spit before.
Nah.
Yeah, you have. You definitely have. With that. Yeah.
I like my chances.
And you probably deserve it, too.
Okay. we'll agree to disagree.
I know that since you're in the food service industry as well, and that you have experience in it, that you can do whatever you want when you're in a restaurant, but the rest of us have to follow some guidelines there, sir.
All right. I'll keep it under control. If you disagree with me or if you've managed...
I've never heard of that before. There are 5 steps of them for a reason.
If you have managed a steakhouse or served steak or any food, let me know why I'm wrong, or more importantly, why I'm right.
But you admitted yourself that it was snooty.
Yeah, but I mean, that's what am I supposed to do here?
Order your steak in either of the two ways.
You know, I can put a caveat. I can put a little pivot on it. Look, if it's no trouble,
you think
rare plus. But hey, if you're busy, we can just rare is great. A little bloody.
We get medium rare then.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's fine.
There's steps. There are steps already created for the things that you're talking about.
Can a man not have what he wants?
No. I don't think you should when it's this ridiculous.
321-1390, Logan, put it on the poll. Can you have what you want? Can the steak be the temperature you want? Can it be medium rare plus? Is Painter right? Yes.
Okay, put it on the poll. Is Painter a jerk for ordering steaks medium rare plus? And put medium rare plus in quotes, please. Yes or no? He got hammered yesterday in his poll, so he's on a losing streak.
The fake news media is out to get me. Obviously, soft pretzels are superior to nachos.
I don't think any... You know, yesterday was national...
Getting excited about these pretzels.
Yesterday was National Nachos Day as well.
Wow.
So I mean, like, you picked a battle against nachos on the wrong day, my friend.
Yeah, and that's why soft pretzels are superior. Were it not for that day,
is there a pretzel day? Well, there's a pretzel day on the
surely
office.
Surely there's a pretzel day.
That's one of the better early run office episodes. Like when they were still trying to find their footing.
I know that the Amish sell some fiery pretzels.
Really.
Yes.
Okay.
Some of the oldest markets in the country have great pretzels in the Northeast. As I'm a traveled, cultured boy, yes. I share this information.
Did you order? Did you tell the Amish to get you a medium rare plus steak?
Can I get? No, but I did have a medium rare plus pretzel. Throw it back in there. Just 8 more seconds,
please. Yeah, I have.
Logan is trying to show Justin something. I don't know what it is. National Pretzel Day is Sunday, April 26th.
It needs a question mark at the end of it, yes.
Proofreading? Yeah.
Yeah.
Sunday, April 26th will be your National Pretzel Day.
And the extra space between the quotes.
I have Justin proofread all of my tweets.
Yeah. What's going on?
Pretzel Day is coming up in April.
Okay.
We're about a half a year away. So there is a Pretzel Day.
We'll have a special episode in honor of Pretzel Day.
A revote.
A revote. Nachos still win.
Boo.
All right. Let's turn our attention over to Auburn football here real quick. Here on today's show, Auburn practicing yesterday, practice one more time today. They will get the weekend off. Here we go. There was a question yesterday about some injuries. People were questioning about Marlon Davidson, back injury. He's practiced both times this week. Jeremiah Denson, who missed the game with a virus back this week. Painter, the only real injury question heading to the Georgia game right now, besides how healthy Booby Willow is going to be, is long snapper Bill Taylor. Long snapper Bill Taylor has an undisclosed injury, and he might not be able to play, but they expect him back before the end of the season. Auburn will replace him with Clark Smith and Jacob Quattlebaum. Jake Quadbon, the walk-on, who got the team's special teams helmet sticker. A positive thing on Saturday, and we had a question about this earlier this week, was about Nick Broms. Nick Broms graded out particularly well, according to Gus Malzahn, and was a solid center in terms of his blocking as well. So I think that's probably an injury. That's probably a lineup change that's going to stick for the rest of the season with Broms over Caleb Kim.
321-1390, Justin breaking down some Auburn football, and Rob has called in. 321-1390, join the show. Rob, what's up?
I wanted to give y'all a call and talk about, you know, the Auburn fan base and just some of the things I see with our fans, and I think fans in general today. And I don't know if the college football playoff system with just four teams is the reason, but there are a lot of people walking around with a woe is me attitude, and the world's going to end, and, you know, waiting for the other shoe to drop. And, you know, it's just ridiculous. And Philip Marshall's right. He was talking about, I read him in, you know, one of his articles this week that he watched Purdue get a victory in a Big Ten game the other day, you know, against a team that they were not supposed to beat. And the celebration was incredible. And he said, you know, we're not seeing that like we used to. And people are like, well, if we don't win the championship, you know, the season's a waste. Well, go tell that to the kids on the team. I mean, look, I want to win every game. I don't ask for a lot. I want perfection. I want to go undefeated. It doesn't always happen. Rarely does it happen. But I think we need to take a look at what we are becoming as fans. But it also, you know, we pay the coaches $49 million and all that. But you know what? I hope we beat Georgia and Alabama. But if we don't, and we were to fire Gus Malzahn, we're going to be Tennessee, you know, part two. Have a lost decade of just one coach after another coming in. We better be very careful with what we're doing. And I think we're on the verge of seeing the mega donors, you know, like Arkansas. You've got J.B. Hunt, the Waltons. Warren Stevens is worth over $6 billion in Little Rock. They've got some powerful people. And I'm telling you, Chad Morris may not make it through the end of this year. Mm-hmm. And where are they going to be? And, I mean, we got to be very careful because, again, you know, T. Boone Pickens just died. He gave Oklahoma State close to $300 million.
Yep.
We got to be very careful with where we're going. Yeah, I want y'all's comments on that. As always, great show, and I enjoy listening, and I tell everybody in the country to listen because y'all are like great trial lawyers going before the Supreme Court. You got your shit together. I love it.
Thanks, Rob. Appreciate the call and the kind words.
All right.
3-2-1-1390.
Your reaction there, Painter.
In terms of being cautious.
Rob saved.
I mean, I think that is, you know, so there's some disagreement here in the office that I have with some folks here. And I guess to Shadow's point, one of the things that's been sort of a rallying cry for some fans is you're a loser. You're not being aggressive enough. You don't think highly enough of the program. If your response to Gus Malzahn being what a lot of Auburn fans think is averages, all right, who do you go get? I don't think that's being a loser. I think having a plan in place and realizing that there could be an appealing option waiting for Gus Malzahn in Arkansas, perhaps is something to consider. I don't think it makes you a loser to weigh the options, and that Auburn is at a very serious crossroads as power seems to be consolidating and as their rivals, Georgia, Alabama, and LSU, all seem to be moving in an upward or stable position.
And here's the other thing you got to keep in mind, and I said this the other day when I was on Feinbaum. I don't think there is a team in college football that has as wide of a range of what could happen to them as a program over these next 3 weeks than Auburn. I really don't, because beating Georgia and Alabama could mean a lot of things for Auburn in terms of where they are as a program, where they are as a team this season, where they end up in the postseason. Huge for a lot of different reasons if they pull it off. If they beat one of those teams, it's going to be a very interesting vibe over the next few weeks about where Auburn is. 9-3, pretty good year, but next year you're going to have a rebuilding project on both of your lines. 8-4, buddy, I don't know. I think all bets are off at 8-4, and then you start thinking about what could happen. What could happen to Gus Malzahn? Would someone else try to kind of persuade him to go away if the fan base and the environment has gotten to a real tough spot in terms of what they're doing, you know, and how people feel about Malzahn? It's going to be really interesting. But they are focused in right now on taking care of business against Georgia and Alabama. And you know what, Painter? We'll see how good Alabama is at home against really good competition, like Russell was saying, against LSU this weekend. But I think Auburn's got a good chance to beat Georgia, and I think Auburn's going to have a good shot to at least compete and have a chance to win against Alabama at home. We've seen this happen. We've seen this story before twice now within the last, you know, three times Auburn has played Georgia and Alabama both at home. So I think
that there's a lot of stuff already floating out there about what if this, what if that. But really, a lot of the noise can quiet down if you beat your biggest rivals for sure.
321-1390. Thanks for the call, Rob. We'll get to our final break here in hour number two. More Lunch Break after this.
The Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7.
Oh, it's not looking good for Painter.
It's looking great.
At ESPN 106.7 on Twitter, is Painter a jerk for wanting his steak, quote, medium rare plus? The yeses are running away with it already. Off to an early lead. Sarah P. already taking a shot at you, Painter. You hate to see that. You really, really do. If you missed any of today's show, you can check out our podcast presented by University Ace Hardware on ESPNAU.com, iTunes, SoundCloud, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcast. University Ace is your Auburn helpful place, located next to the movie theater in Auburn. All right. Let's head to the phone line. Spectre is waiting. What's up, Spectre?
I don't know. I just got through laughing. I was just listening to Rob's comments.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about trial lawyers now. maybe public defender.
Yeah, it's high praise for us. We might be the we're not going into law anytime soon, either of us.
Yeah, you guys have some unusual subject matter.
Yes.
During the lunch break.
Yes, we definitely do. We definitely do.
Yeah, I'll give you all that. But I agree with what Rob was saying.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an Auburn fan, just like most people that call in are Auburn fans. Of course, there's a couple out there that are not,
mm-hmm.
or pretend to be not. this reminds me of 2017. That was right after the LSU game when we were backed up and Gus's job was on the line, and he had to win those last two games to be the coach of Auburn the following year, and he did it. He beat Georgia and Alabama, but, of course, we lost in the championship game back to Georgia. I think that pretty well that's about what we got to do this time, not to save his job, but just to save our dignity, I guess.
Yeah. The fan base, definitely. I feel like if you go 9-3 and you beat Georgia but lose to Alabama, you're still gonna get some frustration about this season for sure.
Yeah.
Spectre.
Well, I'm gonna go into detail this afternoon on the drive about mm-hmm. that about the fan base.
All right.
Because I come from the Shug Jordan era.
Right.
And if you can get through the Shug Jordan era to Doug Barfield, and you're a pretty good fan.
No, I would bet you have definitely seen a lot if you had to cover those eras for sure.
Yeah, I mean I witnessed losing to Alabama 10 years in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And that was good. And that being said, I never heard anyone ask for Shug's head.
Right.
And that's if Shug was coaching today, He wouldn't have had 25 years at Auburn.
No, I agree. It's a completely different. It's a completely different culture at this point. Yeah. And a different vibe for sure.
Anyway, I got to get, but I'll go into more detail this afternoon.
Yeah.
And nice talking to you guys.
Yeah, appreciate it, Spectre. And yeah, make sure to tune in this afternoon from 4 to 6. Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on the drive. Spectre will be calling in, and y'all can join the show as well. 334-321-1390. Appreciate the call, Spectre. And yeah, really good point. Like it is kind of funny how much expectations have turned, and just the culture of college football has shifted so much. I do wonder, we talk about Joe Paterno, we talk about Bobby Bowden, we talk about somebody as legendary as Shug Jordan here at Auburn. I wonder how many years they'd have gotten in the modern landscape, because some of them had to get through some really rough stuff to get to the point. Also, Painter, we talk about Dabo Swinney and even just a decade ago. Like, does Dabo Swinney even get a shot after, the slow start he had after being promoted to head coach at Clemson?
Yeah, I don't think it gets discussed enough, but it didn't start out super hot for Dabo. And there was a time where he and his family, I think, thought they weren't going to be able to finish out their time at Clemson. And he's become, I think, behind Urban Meyer, who's not coaching currently, and Nick Saban,
mm-hmm.
probably the most respected coach in college football. And, you know, the difference with Meyer, I think, is that he went to, after having success at Utah, he had success at programs that had already been very established contenders. I think the difference with Clemson was obviously at one point they were known for choking. And like Auburn, they sort of floated in that tier of being relevant occasionally, but not consistently.
Yeah. No, it would be very interesting to see how that would work in this day and age. And also another example I think that we don't talk about quite enough is Ed Orgeron. Look, man, Ed Orgeron was so bad at Ole Miss, people thought he was never going to get another shot, and then he was just going to be the interim darling at USC, and then he did it again at LSU, and then when LSU was like, hey, let's go ahead and give you the job, people were like, hold on, you're going to give that guy this job? Really? And look how well it's turned out. He's made the right hires. He's done the right thing kind of building the culture. And now he's team's number one in the country heading into Alabama this weekend. Like that, something to be said of that as well. Patience, I think, is a completely different thing. But I think when it relates to Gus Malzahn, some Auburn fans can say, we've probably been patient long enough. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes like Shadow and like Rob, what we're saying in the, or, sorry, Spectre and Rob in these last couple of calls, is that, you know, a lot can be swung with these games against Georgia and Alabama.
Time now for What's On Tonight.
All right, What's On Tonight? Let's start off with Thursday Night Football. Fox 720, Chargers Raiders. Painter, did the Chargers follow up a big win over the Packers with one over the Raiders in Oakland?
I think the Chargers got it. I think I'm just not confident on the Raiders. They're farther along than I thought. I don't think the roster's impressive. They were sort of a joke in the offseason. At least at this point, you have to be, I think, you have to be alert and have a pulse to beat this Raiders team as they've been competitive. But the Chargers have been disappointing to this point. If they can beat the Packers, though, if they play like that, they'll beat the Raiders.
Their defense is strong. I mean, they've got a Bosa, which always helps your chances to have a really good defense. And, they can just figure out how to get that running game going next to Phillip Rivers with Melvin Gordon and Austin Eckler and that. They'll be fine, I think. Might not be a playoff team, but I think they'll be fine. TNT doubleheader tonight in the NBA. 7 o'clock, Celtics-Hornets. Kemba Walker returns to Charlotte.
So we think it'll be a positive reception?
I think it should be, and I think it will be.
He deserves one.
Yeah.
Certainly.
Well, I mean, you also got to think the Hornets were the ones that didn't offer him a max deal to come back. So.
And I don't blame them for not. I don't think it helps them in the long run.
Right, with the way their roster is at the moment.
But at the same time, certainly he was loyal during that his stretch with the team.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that whatsoever. Also, Painter.
Yes?
9:30, Trailblazers Clippers. Damian Lillard taking on Kawhi Leonard and the gang in Los Angeles. Could be interesting. Dame's off to a really good start this season.
We haven't talked a lot about load management, which has been one of the bigger conversations as basketball in the NBA has just gotten started. So it's a long season, and it's some of the results we're not as interested in at this point of the year. But load management probably has been the most discussed topic. Where do you fall on that? You know, I get why.
Smart.
I think it's smart. I understand why the league's not crazy about it, and fans who want to see superstars aren't crazy about it.
It's an entertainment business, but you've also got to, like, it's much more important to be healthier at the end of the season than in the playoffs than it is right now.
And I guess there's an argument in my mind that for Kawhi, like, he, by doing so, he also loses out on something like being an MVP. Because you can't, if you miss 15
titles, though.
Yeah, and I think that's what he wants, right? But I also think that he could be an MVP candidate if he played most of the year, but instead he'd rather win championships, and I think that's smart even if it's not what the NBA wants.
Yeah, exactly. College football tonight, ESPNU at 6:30, Louisiana Lafayette taking on Coastal Carolina. A little Fun Belt action for you. 7 o'clock on ESPN. Temple, South Florida going on. Couple of college basketball games for you tonight. Big Ten Network at 6, Bryant and Rutgers. Can Rutgers win in a sport? It's our main question for the day. ACC Network at 6. Presbyterian takes on Clemson. The Blue Hose of Presbyterian. A little in-state rivalry with the Clemson Tigers. FS1 tonight at 6:30, Painter. A little soccer action for you. The United States Women's National Team in a friendly against Sweden.
All right.
Our nation's best athletic team in action. So it's always good to see them. They got a new coach. Yeah. Got a new coach. So it's gonna be kind of a debut there for him. The Dan Peck Memorial HBO pick of the evening.
RIP, we love you, Dan, don't we? Yes, we do. That's why we love the pizza.
Pizza, wings, and waffles. Pizza, wings, and
Dan?
HBO Zone at 11:10, Bruce Almighty. Buffalo. I forgot about that.
I mean, good movie, good film, Jennifer Aniston.
Mm-hmm.
Good work.
Good work. Good work, everyone.
Proud of you.
Steve Carell did the sequel. I remember that one.
Mm-hmm. I don't think Noah. I think it lost a lot of money.
Yeah.
It wasn't as great. Love Steve Carell, but that's one of the few where it didn't quite pan out.
Didn't click. Didn't click for him. Finally, Painter HGTV at 9. House Hunters International is in Vieves, Puerto Rico.
Justin, what's going on at The Athletic? You've been a busy, busy boy.
All right, we got a story up on DJ Williams and his start to his career at Auburn, why it is he's been so impressive so early, and he's doing it against SEC competition. One thing about DJ Williams you'll find out is not much of a talker. Not much of a talker, but you know, he lets his play. It's funny, somebody pointed out to me, it's very interesting. DJ Williams and Booby Whitlow have different rushing styles and different personalities, and I think that could complement each other pretty well if you're talking about a two-headed monster moving into the future at the running back position for Auburn. We've got a story coming out tomorrow on Auburn's defensive line and what the future could hold for them there. And, yeah, other stuff going on, a lot of good college football content for the big weekend. Auburn's not playing, but Alabama, LSU, Penn State, Minnesota, first college football playoff rankings, a lot of good national talk going on there at theathletic.com. So sign up if you haven't already. Check us out. And, yeah, we will keep it on rolling tomorrow. Tomorrow's show, preview some college basketball, Auburn Davidson.
The machine makes his appearance.
The weekend, yeah, the machine makes his return to the airwaves here. On the lunch break, you can follow me on Twitter at JFergusonAU. You can follow Painter at PaintSharpless. Painter, take it away.
Thanks for listening. We'll try to be better tomorrow. Appreciate the input from you all today. The Drive with Bill Cameron from 4 to 6. That's about all we got, folks. Try to stay dry. I think we might get some rain later on. It's going to get chilly. That's all right. Sweater season is upon us. Get your steak medium rare plus. Try it. You'll like it, I promise. That's it. We'll be back tomorrow, 11 o'clock. Auburn Hoops and more on Friday's edition of the show. Until then, keep it toasty.